Welcome, everyone. So this is my first time doing this, so I beg for your patience. But Kim will step in whenever I stray too far. So the call today, the proposed agenda, we'll start with the agenda review, 2 minutes, IP note, 1 minute, call notes, 1 minute, move on to scribe selection, 3 minutes, introductions and reintroductions, 3 minutes, modeling verifiable credentials for education update, 10 minutes. And finally, the speaker, the Open University, is talking about Open University, solid and open badges for 40 minutes. So that was the agenda review. Number two, IP note. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributors to any CCG work items must be members of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. There's the
I can paste these
link.
In as you talk.
Oh, sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you have to ensure that you have a W3 account, which you can get at the link that Kim will paste in. And there is a W3C Community Contributor License Agreement, a CLA, which is at the link that will be pasted in. Call notes. These minutes and an audio recording of everything said on this call are archived at following link. We use IRC to cue speakers during the call as well as to take minutes. There are two links to which you can connect to take a look at that. All attendees should type present plus to get your name in the attendee list in the transcript. In IRC, type Q plus to add yourself to the queue with an optional reminder, for example, Q plus, space TO, space, and then whatever it is that you want to remind yourself to talk about. The two-part is required. If you're not an IRC, simply ask to be put on the queue. Please be brief so the rest of the queue get a chance to chime in. You can always add yourself to the queue again. Note, this meeting is held by voice, not by IRC. Off-topic IRC comments are subject to deletion from the record. We work hard to manage a single thread of conversation so everyone can participate and be heard. Please respect the group process by joining the queue when you have something to contribute. Now we'll move on to scribe selection, and Kim will take over. Thank you.
Thank you, James. Did it like a pro. Any volunteers for scribe today? Okay, no volunteers. We start going through the list in order and moving people to the back if they've scribed recently. Alan Third, are you able to scribe?
No, I'm taking part in the presentation, I'm afraid.
I'm sorry, what's that?
I'm taking part in the presentation, so I can't, I'm afraid.
Oh, sorry about that.
No, it's okay.
I didn't realize that. Thank you. Yeah, no. You're off the hook. let's see. Okay, Chris Wink did it recently. James did it recently.
I can do it again.
Actually, we will take you up on that. Thank you very much. Okay, next part, introductions and reintroductions. Okay, is there anyone new to the call that would like to introduce themselves? Might call on aliases that I don't recognize. Irene Gattico, would you like to introduce yourself? If you're talking, well, you might be on mute if you're talking. One other alias that looks new, Mano, M-A-N-O. If you're here, please unmute yourself and introduce yourself. Okay, I think we may not have, we may have people still getting their audio set up. How about T3 Phil? Phil, would you be able to introduce yourself? Okay, I think let's just move on to the next part. we have a very packed agenda, so we'll reintroduce next time. Okay, so I'm adding a new part, announcements and reminders. I wanted to mention a couple of things. One is that we're moving this to this meeting to every other week, so I will be updating the calendar invite. There's a couple things going on, but one thing that I wanted to mention is that we're going to talk about in the next section, we want to start moving towards more of a work item focus in addition to our main speakers. So I think especially as we are trying to get some more deliverables accomplished, we want to have time to work on that while lining up, a good future slate of speakers. But I think we'll start increasingly spending some time discussing progress on the work items, like modeling verifiable credentials. So, for example, next week, our next meeting, which will be 2 weeks from now, we'll be talking exclusively about that document. In fact, to tee that up, today we're going to just give a quick update on the status of that document. So we're moving on to the next section, modeling verifiable credentials for education. So for reference, we have a document that we've been working on. The idea is to come up with a set of verifiable credential working examples that we're expressing, these sort of well-known credentials as verifiable credentials, and using things like the ILR wrapper and work done until now, sort of coming up with a good set of recommendations, and that will serve two purposes. One, there'll be a snapshot recommendation that this group produces, but two, we can turn these over to efforts like, the IEEE LER group, so that they can actually move forward with proper standardization. Because in the in W3C community groups, we are not a standards developing org. We are more like a standards recommending org. We focus more on broader ecosystem and incubating and all this kind of stuff. So with that, let me bring up a couple of topics that I wanted to mention. So first, I am going to be calling on a couple of people during this section. One is Jim Kelly from PESC, and the other will be Nate Otto. So in the document, there were two topics. One was a discussion of how we want to deal with XML, currently XML formatted credentials. So let me see where that is. It's working example 3, transcript. I'll put the direct link to that here. Okay, so there were discussions happening in the comments, which I tried to summarize and pull into the document. But we wanted to pursue XML formatted credentials. We wanted to pursue two paths. One is, what would it look like? One open question: do verifiable credentials support XML as we suspect or thought that they would? And two would be, does it make more sense to model these credentials in JSON or JSON-LD? So I went off to investigate the verifiable credentials as XML paths because I think naively many of us thought that, JSON-LD, it's a serialization of RDF, and XML can be as well. So I think that it seemed intuitive that, you know, since a lot of the work around JSON-LD, like the Verified Credentials spec mentions JSON-LD, but they mention, you know, this is a data model, you can use different representations. I think we assumed that XML was theoretically supported, it was just lacking tool set. Now, after a lot of digging around W3C memory and everything, we realized that there is a bit more work to be done. It's not as straightforward as we thought, but it can be supported. I won't go into details of how that would work yet, but so that's something that's doable. And so that could be interesting because for any you know, current standard that's expressed as XML, this could be a solution to compatibility in the ability to express existing XML credentials as verifiable credentials. So that part, let's see, how would that manifest? If we went that path, there's apparently some tooling work that we could do to support the, you know, the signature schemes and various other currently JSON-LD based tools. But then also we would release kind of a revision to the verifiable credentials data model. Currently in that document, they mentioned two serializations, JSON and JSON-LD. So we would be adding a new serialization. And the total amount of work is expected to be small. It's just mostly bookkeeping, rather. So meanwhile, Jim Kelly was looking into the JSON-JSON-LD path. He mentioned that there was work underway at PESC already. And I've invited him to talk about the concerns with going that path. And Jim, are you here and able to discuss that?
I am here and able to discuss it, yes. First of all, I'm Jim Kelly. I'm the PESC board chair, and I'm also an independent consultant. PESC has a long history of standards in education, a lot of financial aid standards, and a lot of other education standards, namely the college and high school transcript. All of those standards are in XML. We see the need for a move to JSON, and so we've actually been discussing this for some time. We've had a JSON-LD task force in place for, I want to say, two or maybe 3 years, discussing the various issues, and we've looked at certain use cases related to some of the other things we're doing with GeoCode and EdExchange. But more recently, we've decided that we need to discuss moving our existing, I shouldn't say moving, that's the incorrect term, adding JSON versions of our XML standards. The XML standards will not disappear, but adding JSON versions of those standards. And that's not a small feat. It's easy to create carbon copies, in theory, of the XML standards, but we need to determine whether that's really what the community wants. Also, I'd like to mention that Michael Sessa, PESC's executive director, is on the line as well, and I see him on the list, who might also be able to answer questions. But we have started the process of taking the existing XML standards and creating JSON versions of them. The there are tools that do that. So you know, creating a carbon copy is not difficult, but And so we're working on that, and we're trying to decide really what the path forward is. We're putting a working group together that will begin to examine that as a standard. Of course, there's a process related to standard creation, and it's not just running a tool. It involves review and approval. This is a voluntary consensus process, and it involves some steps. I guess one more thing I'd add is really the question between Jason and Jason LD. I think that it's pretty clear that we would be able to move to add a JSON version of our standards. I think what is a little less clear is if or when we would be able to do JSON LD. Now, more recently, in discussions with Kim, I've begun to realize the value of a JSON LD version of our standards, especially as a payload in a VC wrapper, because that payload becomes semantically readable, and the data is readable if pure JSON, but it might be more valuable in a JSON format. So there's a lot we have to discuss. We are in the process. I know there's a desire to have PESC standards in a JSON format at a minimum, and so I don't have a time frame to offer up and say by December 5th this is going to be ready. That doesn't exist. But we are beginning to pull the process together now of building a work group and gathering the pieces that we need to create a new standard. So I guess that's all I would say, and I'll stop talking.
Thank you, Jim. And one thing I wanted to highlight, though, I thought that the question he brought up of JSON versus JSON LD was very interesting. I thought that's probably a good conversation to have in this group. A lot of the efforts so far have been assuming linked data, but, using linked data, signature suites definitely has its own additional kind of complexity with it. So I just wanted to bring that up in the context of this group, because even if we're all, on the same page that we like it, it's good to have that sort of, discussed and documented. That will benefit other people. The other one I wanted to bring up, and I'm sorry for this. There was a to-do somewhere. I may have accidentally resolved it, but I think it had to do with working example one, course program certificate. And Nate, I'm trying to remember the exact context, but I think that what we were doing, I remember where it was. It was the C example here of, I don't know if I can link to it directly, but it's under the problem statement. Many VC EDU pilots are DIYing the schema, C example here. So this example shows like a very minimal, I'll link to it directly, educational verifiable credential. And you can think of it as, if you were just designing the minimal thing today, what would it look like? And that's sort of what a lot of current pilots are using that are coming more from the verifiable credential space, not the educational standard space. So there's a highlighted discussion thread happening between Nate and me, and we're just basically teeing up the discussion of, what sort of terminology do we want to use there? Like what basis of, do we want to start on the ILR wrapper or now LER wrapper approach? Do we want to think about what would it be like to model Open Badge as a verifiable credential? So, again, for this
topic as well as the previous one. We're not going to close on it during this call. We're just sort of teeing up the considerations that we're going to be discussing more. So, Nate, would you mind giving your personal thoughts about, you know, so you mentioned in that comment the hazard fee claim. So just curious for your thoughts on what we need there.
Yeah, my pleasure. And first of all, apologies for the train that decided right now would be the perfect time to go by, just as I needed to unmute. So the issue here, and this is a really fun document to work through, first of all. The issue here is we want to decide, how do we model a claim that a learner has gotten a certificate? So if you see in if you scroll down to page 4 or 5, we're working example 1, course/program certificate. It shows a real world or traditional format certificate that we're trying to model. And we want to put this into the language of a verifiable credential. The verifiable credentials data model makes it possible to make any sort of claim about somebody. The simplest example is something about claiming someone's birth date. Is over 21 equals true? Or, birth date is a particular date. Or favorite color is green. These are properties that you're asserting about an individual. And looking at the learning space, one of the ways to assert a attribute about someone is, as in that VC example, GitHub, where the claim, if you open that up, is on line 17, and I'll link directly there in the IRC. Where the claim is degree. The claim is essentially this subject, identified by a DID, has this degree, bachelor degree, of Bachelor of Arts in Science particularly. That's pretty cool that we can use verifiable credentials in this educational space and make claims about it. But the idea of claiming a degree is not a very common claim. If you think back at your own educational career, if you went through informal and formal education and on-the-job training, of all the learning claims that might apply to your journey, probably very few of them, can count them on one hand, would be of type degree like this. And so, what this little comment thread is bringing up is the question of, is there a common claim type that we can use to represent the achievement of an educational goal? In some of the common vocabulary development work that is happening in our community, thanks in part to the IEEE CM4LTS task force as being a recent home base for some of that work. We've had these questions around, what is it that is the core concept that we're trying to define here? And the concept of a defined achievement keeps coming up, where, like a degree as a prototypical model, or a certificate that you might earn, one of these MicroMasters represented in the examples in our modeling document. It's a achievement level that has criteria associated with it. It has a particular issuer. And it's very much the model that the broadly used Open Badges standard fits into, where there is something called a badge class that is a set of properties. It has a name, it has an image that represents an achievement, it has criteria that about what it takes for a learner to get there, and it is assessed by a particular issuer. What does it mean to say that someone has one of these things? The Open Badges vocabulary uses a term called badge for this, as in this assertion is about this particular badge. And so we could potentially use that. And I've also proposed potentially sort of inventing in an appropriate vocabulary, with collaboration with whatever maintainer they have, this slightly more generic idea of has achieved, which is that we make a claim, as in example 3 in this document, approach 2. So if you scroll down to, what page is it? Page 7. Where it says approach to open badge as verifiable credentials, And thanks for highlighting it, highlighting the heading, somebody, and for highlighting the actual claim. You guys are awesome. Kim, thanks for highlighting the claim. I put online, middle of this document where Kim has highlighted OBI holds, which says, oh, hey, maybe we could use a vocabulary term like holds for this. Synonym of has achieved, synonym of badge, essentially, to say that this identifier for our learner holds a particular credential. And that could be a common used term across many types of use case where the common attribute is that they are a defined achievement, a particular set of criteria and metadata around a defined achievement that has been defined by a particular author. I think this approach, whatever term we use, and I'm obviously very wishy-washy about what would be best, whatever term we select, if we get good community agreement and potentially into standards track that a term that describes has achieved should be used, then it applies to a whole bunch of different use cases within the verifiable credentials ecosystem. There's even one, if you want to explore a little further, at the nearly the very bottom of this document, working example 5, what I've called an open skills assertion, is essentially the same thing, and I used a slightly different variant on the term this time, has achieved. Proposing maybe we could stick it into a T3 learner record context and vocabulary. It's the same idea, except that the competency that is being recognized, as in this learner has achieved this competency, is not necessarily defined by the issuer of the credential itself. It could be a shared definition of competency across many different issuers. So that's the basic idea of what I'm hoping one of our action items can be to explore, is whether this idea of a has achieved claim that applies to many different educational use cases and can help organize this branch of verifiable credentials, whether that has legs. I think it has more power than going with very specific terms like degree, as shown in that very first example on GitHub. And I'm interested in working with y'all to explore further.
Definitely. Thank you so much, Nate. That's a great description. And I completely agree. We should spend the time now to get the correct general concepts in. So I think I noticed the speaker queue is empty. So reminder, we're going to be coming back to these questions more frequently in the coming meetings. So it is time now to turn to the main topic, which is we have some people from Open University with us, led by John Domingue, to talk about their deployments and based on solid and open badges. So I'll turn it over to them.
Hi. So a couple of things. This is going to be hopefully a joint presentation. Two of my colleagues were having trouble getting on the call, so we'll see. And before I start, just on the previous discussion, just in our experience in what we've been doing, the date is important. So we think about all academic accreditation as almost as an event. So at a certain point in time, something happens where you're issued something, because there can be fraud, credentials can be revoked. So rather than thinking of someone having something forever, at a certain point in time, something happened. And also, there are certain types of credentials which have a lifespan. So that's my two cents. Let me get into the talk, and we'll try to go quickly. So we're basically going to give a fairly quick overview of the work we've been doing recently at the Open University. We've been looking at blockchains and accreditation, and also over the last few years, and also so this is really going to be a set of of highlights of our activities. And the most recent is actually around COVID-19 certification, but it gets us a chance to talk about our most recent work. And this is going to be a joint work, and it will be a joint presentation between myself, Alan Third, Alex Mikioannidis, Mano Ramachandran, who actually got married yesterday in India, so he's trying to call in from there, and Niaz Chowdhury. So I assume that everyone has the link to the Google slides. They've been circulated. Yeah. So hopefully everyone is looking at slide one. So now I'll start. By the way, on slide one, there's a URL to our main website where you can get an overview of all our work. So if you move
John,
to slide...
I don't think we got the slide deck, actually. So apologies if you sent it. People in the IRC are mentioning they don't have it.
Okay, let me just put it
the,
in.
Oh, sorry.
Let me just put it in now.
Alan put it in there.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. So hopefully that works. If there are any problems, please let me know. Okay. So I'm going to move start with slide one, and I'll move to slide two now. So just a quick overview of the context. So we're all at the Open University. In fact, we're in the Technology R&D Center for the Open University. A couple of things I would say is we're just over 50 years old. We have a strong belief in social justice. So it's in our mission statement. and the word open for us means that you do not need any qualifications at all to start studying with us. So that's what that links to our social justice mission. We have just over 170,000 students, some of whom have not studied for over a decade. I think we have 20,000 students who are disabled. So we really want to be an inclusive university for all. If you move to slide three, we believe in teaching at scale, and we have a number of elements for that, both in-house and external partnerships. We have a free learning platform called OpenLearn, which has had 60 million visits since it started in 2006 from 239 countries. We founded our own MOOC company, FutureLearn, which I think is the fourth biggest in the world. So this is another free learning resource. And we have 10 million registered learners there, taking courses from our 155 partners globally. We also have had, since the very beginning, a strong partnership with the BBC. So a lot of our videos that we make for our students are made by the BBC. And we co-produce a lot of radio and TV programs. The most famous is probably Blue Planet 2, which has been watched by over 100 million people. And we act as scientific advisors for that program, and many others. I won't say much about slide four, so if you move on to slide four, but just to say that we believe in lifelong learning. So learning is something that you need to stop when you're 22 or 23, because you've been to university. This is something, especially today, that you need to carry out across your whole life. And facilitating that is open badges. So having small chunks of learning supported by accreditation. So our view of learning is it will be a mixture of learning in the workplace, learning fragments at a university, learning on the MOOC platform, and they should be accredited. So now I'll pass on to slide five and hand over to Alan Third. Alan? Is Alan there? He was there a minute ago.
You may be muted, Alan.
Alan, you're not there? Okay. If Alan's fallen off for some period, I'll carry on with the slides. And then Alan, can you hear me? Yeah.
Hi. Sorry about that. I don't know. I just wouldn't let me unmute. I don't know what was going on. Yes. So sorry. from slide five then. So yes, one of the things that comes up, I suppose, and is particularly relevant when you're looking at lifelong learning, and you're looking in our context of students who are not necessarily full-time students who may be working at the same time, who are learning in all kinds of context, is that the recent moves in general towards decentralization online, or re-decentralization, as I've seen it referred to, are particularly important. So this is why we've been looking at technologies like Solid. So Solid, for those who don't know, is an example of what's called a linked data platform. So Solid is the implementation pushed by and started by Tim Berners-Lee. And the idea is to turn web applications into something like just views on data, where data is relating to an individual, is held and controlled by the individual it relates to. So rather than saying, you know, LinkedIn has an account for you and maintained your contacts with on LinkedIn, and Facebook has an account for you and they maintain your contacts on Facebook, and your agenda, which might be different from the agenda that you keep in your Google account.
Yeah, oh boy. Oh.
Hello?
Everyone, if you're not the main speaker, please make sure you're muted. I have a way to, let's see. Okay. Keep going. I think if that comes up again, I'll try to brute force mute them.
Okay, no problem. That's fine. So if you go to slide six, essentially, so you have this concept of a data pod that belongs to you, where you keep the data about yourself, or multiple data pods about yourself, if you would like. And then you permit or don't permit applications to access your data in order to support what you want from it, rather than necessarily what the application provider wants from it. Which may, as we're all painfully aware in many situations, may not be the same thing. So, I mean, this has been a general conversation. So the linked data platform idea, the SolidPod concept, is coming from people like Tim, from WCC sources. It's obviously quite linked data focused, linked data friendly. Which is good. This is what we know about as a lab. And the interesting thing, though, so that we see a lot of discussion about personal data and controlling it and maintaining it in the hands of the subject. But if you go to slide seven, the thing is, some of your personal data is valuable to you. You can gain value from it, but you may have an incentive to change it, to edit it. So if other people are going to give you value based on what your personal data says, then you need to be able to verify it. So this, hence the connection to verifiable, comes to this category of verifiable personal data, which I would say this data, it is personal. So the principle that you should control it and host it and have access to it is good, but you also want to be able to prove to people that the value you're deriving from it is actually justified, not just education. Is qualifications in particular a strong example of this. You've not just gone in and edited your learning history to get yourself better and to get a better job. So this is why we've been looking at VCs, and in particular VCs backed by blockchain to support this, proof that data hasn't been edited. Slide 8, please. And we particularly, because of who we are, been looking at this in an education environment. So consider data concerning things like qualifications or your work history and CV, but also learning activity data, which is increasingly being used for learning analytics. This could be helping you with you, and then employers, universities, tutors, yourself could gain services, could run services on top of it and gain value from them. And for those which, from which you derive value, you can prove to others with VCs that you haven't been tampering with them. So slide 9, please. So this is a, we have a kind of generic architecture, I suppose, the idea being just to have a all-purpose sort of provable personal data store. So using solid to store data, in our case using blockchains to prove non-tamperability, and then to share those using verifiable credentials, so that we can essentially build the implement the VC model on top of the solid plus blockchain architecture, so that you have this ability to share this valuable personal data and prove its contents to others. So that is the sort of overall context in which we're working. I'm going to pass now to Alex Mitroyanidis, who will talk about some of the projects we've been doing.
Thanks, Alan. Hello, everyone. This is Alex Mikroyanidis. I'm a research fellow at the Knowledge Media Institute of the Open University, and I will very briefly present one of our most recent projects in the sphere of verifiable credentials. This is, if you go to slide 11, I will be talking about Qualitain. This is our this is a new Horizon 2020 European project, which is about the creation, piloting, and the evaluation of decentralized solutions for storing, sharing, and verifying education and employment qualifications. We are 10 partners. We are both academic organizations and also government agencies. If you go to slide 12, you can see here the main areas that we are targeting through large-scale pilots. So we are conducting pilots in lifelong learning, in smart curriculum design, in public sector staffing, and also in HR consultancy and competency management services. In slide 13, you can see a bit more about the lifelong learning pilot that we at the Open University are leading. So we are targeting transparent and immutable accreditation through decentralized blockchain solutions. And on top of that, we are offering personalized recommendations to lifelong learners so that they can, so that we can contribute to their personal and professional progression. Moving on to slide 14, these are the main stakeholder groups that we are targeting. First of all, lifelong learners who pursue learning throughout their lifetime for either personal or professional reasons, and also educational institutions. These are institutions that provide education or training services, either paid ones or free, like open educational resources or MOOCs. Moving on to slide 15, this is our main use case. We are, you can see at the core of it, we have the personal e-portfolio of the learner, and at the and the fundamental, the main component of it is the smart badge, which offers instantly verifiable accreditation and also personalized recommendations about jobs and courses based stemming from the skills, from the key skills that the that are stored in the smart buds. In slide 16, you can see some of the recommendations that we are producing based on the skills that the lifelong learner has earned. At the top level of the screen, you can see a map view of jobs that the learner can filter based on their region of interest. And also on the bottom half of the screen, you can see recommendations about jobs that are a partial match to the skills of the learner. And in the following slide, 17, you can see recommendations that we are offering which regard courses that will help learners acquire their missing skills to apply for their dream job. So moving on to slide 18, we are currently in the phase of scoping the landscape and understanding the needs of our stakeholders. So to this end, we have conducted a series of consultation workshops in major educational technology conference so that we elicit requirements from groups of learners, educators, researchers, and practitioners. You can see our findings so far in slide 19. In the interest of time, I will not go into a lot of detail about this, but I would just like to highlight the themes that have emerged from this consultation exercise. First of all, there is a need for immutable both formal and informal qualifications. Lifelong learners need scaffolding, they need pathways, and there is an emerging need to acquire micro-credentials, especially in a post-COVID economy, which is very fluid. Micro-credentials offer this flexibility and offer a very dynamic way to acquire additional skills based on the demands and trends in the job market. In terms of career counseling, job seekers need comprehensive overviews of the very changing market trends. And also, one final thing that emerged very strongly was the need for the requirements for data ownership and privacy, for self-sovereign identity, and for the ability of the learners and job seekers to control their identity and control also who acts alone. So this is very quickly the work we've been doing so far within QualiChain. We are now moving on to the next phase of this project, which regards the actual development, addressing these requirements, developing decentralized solutions and deploying them in the lifelong learning domain. So I'll hand back to John, who will present the Institute of Coding project.
Hi, I'll be quick because I noticed that time is pressing on. Just a couple of things I would say about Alex's presentation. So he was talking about a European-funded project, QualiChain, and I'm going to talk about a UK-funded project. And he's highlighted a couple of themes that have come out. One is that skills are important. So one of the main reasons why people study is to improve their job or to get a job. And I see that there's a lot of opportunities in having a shared data space between learners, educators, and employers. And the structure of that shared data space is skills. So your accreditation, however it's represented, should link to skills, which are going to be in online job adverts. The other thing I would mention of Alex's talk is that there's a new European standard between the European MOOC companies called the micro-credential. And that represents 100 to 150 hours worth of learning. So it's something that's important to us. So if you move to slide 20, I'll talk about the Institute of Coding. This is a project which is funded to the tune of £20 million. It was launched by Theresa May when she was the Prime Minister. It's trying to fix the problem that in the UK we don't produce enough computer scientists. We produce about 9,000 graduates every year, and we need to be producing at least double that number. Also, there's an issue. There are issues around diversity and inclusivity of the graduate workforce, which we also try to improve. So the Institute of Coding has 81 industrial partners and 33 universities across the UK, plus 20 outreach partners. So what we've been doing in the project, so one of the main elements is to produce a new accreditation standard for computer science that will make graduates more employable. So one of the things that we found, even though there's a big demand for computing graduates in the UK, their employability rates after 6 months are lower than their STEM colleagues. So we think that there's a mismatch in the skills that they're trained on in UK degrees versus the skills that industry really wants. So there's been an initiative co-led by the Open University and IBM, which focuses on a new, let's say, an addition to a degree standard, which includes the notion of competence, where competence means that the graduate is able to carry out tasks without on their own, without supervision, in an industrial setting, without making a mistake. So there's a version of the standard, which you can get from our website. If you get slide 21, it shows that our standard is based on something called SPHERE, which is the industrial standard. So SPHERE has 7 levels and covers many areas of roles in computing industry. And if you take that, there's basically a matrix with nearly 800 cells. So we produced an open badge representation linked to a blockchain for every one of those cells, and that forms an alignment. So one of the things one can do with an open badge is you can align one open badge to other open badges. So these are badges for which when anyone issues an Institute of Coding badge on top of a degree, we can align to one of these elements. On slide 22, another place where we're using badges is in what we call gateway badges. So at the top, at the what I call the big end degree level, we can map to competence that matches to what industry wants. And gateway badges are for the other end, where we try to increase inclusivity and diversity by lowering the barrier to entry. So we have an extensive website for educators, for learners, and for employers. Introductory workshops and boot camps, etc. But on slide 23, I just show a sample of the documentation we have for badge issuers. So we have a steady pipeline of universities who are running some sort of event. And on the right, on slide 23, you can see that they have to provide a description to a gateway panel. So the gateway panel is made up of 5 UK universities. People send us a description of their badges, a way that they're going to identify their learners. And then at the Open University, we set up a badge. We go design a badge for them. So on slide 24, you can see the site for our gateway badges. So we've issued nearly 1,500. We've been doing this for about 9 months, I guess. And we've created 74 types of badges. So as with the degree badges, there are badges to align to. On slide 25, you can see the 6 gateway badges which can be used for alignments, which support interoperability. And that supports what I was saying at the beginning, that we want to support seamless learning. So someone can do a bit of learning in a summer school or a boot camp, some learning at work, some learning at a university, and they can somehow interoperate. So at the gateway side, we have the simplest form of badges for just attending something. So you attended a one-day workshop. And then if there's assessment, you may self-assess, and then we have a badge for that. If the assessment is not conducted by the learner, We have three levels, bronze, silver, and gold. And they're agreed by the Gateway panel in conjunction with the badge issuer. We also have a relatively new type of badge, which is for community service. So this came up in the pandemic, where we have different IT workers trying to support the community, either by doing some teaching or supporting at a hardware, software level. And then different organizations have asked us that they'd like to recognize that community service. So we've created an IOC badge for that. So I'm sorry that hopefully that wasn't too quick. So now I'll pass back to my colleague, Niaz, who'll talk through about the last element, which isn't strictly in the education space, but it's the last thing we did. So we can talk more about the latest version of our tools and infrastructure. So over to you, Niaz.
Oh, thank you, Sean. Hi there, this is Niaz speaking. Now I'm going to present our COVID-19 antibody test and vaccination certification system. On slide 26, you see one slide that describes some elements of this work. Basically, when the pandemic hit the world earlier this year, we began to develop a smartphone app to provide a decentralized and privacy-preserving certification system. We used verifiable credentials, SolidFox, and to build this system. Hello?
Although
we're
still here.
Yes, thank you. Although it was developed quickly, our preprint was published on the 15th of April this year, but this work wasn't something randomly done. It is rather built on top of the foundation of our previous work that you have already seen earlier in this presentation. The idea is we wanted to develop a smartphone app that gives people the ability to they have developed antibody or taken a vaccine in the COVID-19 when they return to work, school, or attend a concert or a football match and so on. As you can see on slide 26, we have three potential entities here in this app, issuers, holders, and verifiers. An issuer can be an approved entity from the field domain, such as pharmacists. A holder is a person who is going to be tested, and the verifier is an entity going to verify whether or not the holder has an antibody or taken the vaccine. For example, an employer, nursery teacher, and so on. Now I'm moving on to slide 27. On this slide, we see the overall process, giving a glimpse of how the system works underneath. The process begins with the holder visiting a pharmacy where she or he gets tested. The pharmacist, our issuer in this case, checks the identity document of the holder and conducts the test. The test certification in JSON-LD format then goes to the solid vault of the holder with a hash of it going to our blockchain. When a verifier wants to verify the result, following a request from the holder, of course, it's a totally decentralized system, the verifier reads the data and matches its hash with the hash located on the blockchain. The verifier doesn't have any data, or the issuer doesn't have any data. That data is located on the holder's phone, only a hash located on the blockchain. The matching confirms the validity of the certificate and proves what the holder has been claiming here. Next, my colleague, Manohar Ramachandra, will provide you with a demonstration of the app that starts from slide 28. I'm now connecting my colleague from here. He's actually on Zoom account, so he will be speaking from Zoom that you on my phone.
Hi everyone, I hope you can hear me. I'm Manohar Ramachandra. I'll be taking you through the simulation of our app. So as Niaz explained before, what happens if the holder decides to bring as he explained before, like the data is actually not controlled by anyone apart from the holder. So the data, the percentage of the holder is in that phone, in the solid phone. And just the hash of the data is
Hi, I hope that was clear. It was a bit going through Zoom, so sorry about that. I just want to wrap up quickly on slide 33. So just to outline our main contributions. So our focus has been on, as Alan was mentioning earlier, that we want to have a decentralized privacy preserving certification platform. And as part of our overall work on having a decentralized privacy preserving private data platform. And we've been using it, or components of what you've seen for real certification of students in the UK and supporting employability within our EU-funded Qualitain project. So the components for us are the use of Solid, for giving learners complete control over all their learning data. And we're also exploring, again, as Alan said, not just certification, but things like analytics, so that students would have their own analytics data. In terms of data formats, we've started off using open badges, and now we're using verifiable credentials. We're big linked data fanatics and have been even before linked data existed. And we use blockchains, various hashes or other descriptions on the blockchain for to support verification. So with this, we think we can really, let's say, go beyond what the OU has been doing for years and really give students their own self-sovereign learning capabilities. Thank you.
Wonderful. This is a fantastic presentation. And so for everyone who's still here, I apologize. I got us started late today. But there is another, there's someone on the queue. Phil, did you have a question you wanted to ask? Oh, I think we lost him. Let's see if I can reconstruct it. He had okay, so he was saying to mention, is the personal e-portfolio a generic analogy to a digital wallet? This was on the slide, probably 19.
Slide 19. It could have been... yeah, it could have been what Alex was talking about on maybe 15. So on 15, we talk about personal e-portfolio with small badges. So Alex or Alan will maybe add to what I say. But for us, the in terms of implementations, the e-portfolio is a layer over Solid. So you have Solid as your generic personal data platform. Then you use the open badge and verifiable credentials frameworks to represent your collections of things that you acquire over your learning lifetime. And then, as you see on slide 15, the course recommendations, job recommendations are really semantic matching between the skills that are associated with your accreditation with the skills that we're finding or mining out of jobs, which are online.
Great. Thank you so much. And thank you again for this fantastic presentation. And no meeting next week, but we'll meet the week after. So have a good rest of your day, everyone.